Hi, welcome to another episode of So Here's the Thing. I've had kind of a strange week. Last week, I've been doing this series on grief. And last week, I had planned to talk about anger, which is what I'm going to talk about today. But my family experienced a loss of my ex-son-in-law. Who was only 35 years old. And so I had decided that I would just talk about that, about loss and how it impacts us and that kind of thing. But the weird thing is I did the recording, and then I also had written a bunch of notes in case I decided to put it in written form as well. And then later that day, my computer decided to kind of die. And wouldn't connect to anything on the internet. And to make a long story short, after hours on the phone with Apple, I had to basically reset my computer and start it over again as a new computer. And before I did that, I made sure that everything was saved. And I specifically checked the recording that I had done and the notes that I had done for that. And then reset the computer. Got it going again, and that stuff was gone. So, and then I started again this week, typed up a bunch of notes trying to recreate what I had done last week, and then went through some very anxious moments this morning as I thought all that was gone again. So, I don't know what any of that means, but it's weird. I did prepare some stuff to say, but then I just was thinking about the current state of, I guess, the country, but maybe even just my current state, which I think is probably reflective of the state of the country and what so many people are feeling right now. You know, there's different kinds of grief. There's different losses, which I'm sure we all know that. There's the thing when we typically talk about grief and grieving, it's death that we're talking about. Someone has died or someone is about to die, and we are trying to handle that loss, either handle it because it's already happened or trying to prepare ourselves to be ready for the loss. And if anyone's like me, when I'm trying to prepare myself to be ready for something, it's trying to prepare myself to not have to do it. So I try to prepare myself by, for me, a lot of times it's by reading, kind of studying stuff. And then I think if I can prepare my head, then I won't be hurt, or it'll have less of an impact on me, which of course is not in the least bit true. There's also, which I talk about a lot, sort of my own specialty, perhaps unfortunately, is chronic pain. And chronic pain and disability also bring loss. I think the things that we can experience on an ongoing basis is the kind of the death of who I am, or who I thought I was and who I thought I wanted to be, and trying to reform an identity. And I think that's also similar with people who have died. Who are we without them? Well, who am I if I can't go for walks anymore? Who am I if I can't do things around the house that I like to do, like cooking, anymore? And kind of renegotiating with ourselves and recreating our identity over and over. I guess I see chronic pain in my own life as a way that continues on an ongoing basis, sort of all the time. Even simple things like next week I'm having elbow surgery, and there's the anger of an elbow replacement that continues to fail, and not really sure why. Although when I fall, that may be part of it. But there's a loss of, I guess, trying to feel healthy or feeling healthy, and then having to have surgery and sort of having that taken away, there's a feeling of starting over again, a feeling of frustration and anger of surgeries on an ongoing basis because of the connective tissue disorder that I have. So those are some of the things with chronic pain. And then I was thinking in my current neurotic state because of the election, I thought, you know, for me, the election, even though it hasn't been called yet, is a loss for me. Because what I expected was a landslide for Joe Biden to win overwhelmingly, for Democrats to take control of the House again and the Senate again, and for Joe Biden to win, and for our country to sort of say in a unanimous fashion, the hate and division and bigotry and racism and those things that have been fed the last 4 years, that we as a country would speak up and say, this is not okay. This is not who we are. This is not who we want to be. And so to have that not happen, I have a real sense of grief and anger that was not the case. That there's, whatever the percentage of the population it is, it seems like it's almost half of the population in this country thinks that kind of systemic racism and hatred and bigotry is okay. And that blows my mind. And I think the issues around race and systemic racism are also are a cause for grief. Feeling the loss, of what this country could be, how we could be, how we could change things, how we could agree that maybe even though we don't know how to change it all right away, that we could be willing to have the conversation and talk to the people who would know and to make some real changes. And so I'm very sad and very angry that that's not the case. So I'm still hopeful that Joe Biden will win, but still have a real sense of grief and anger at what's happening in our country. I used to run a mindfulness program for children who were, it's from birth to four. And so we had very young children, and what we were trying to do was teach them mindfulness practices that might help them as they grow. So a big thing was breathing, that we would, you know, stop and take a breath randomly throughout the day. And then when kids were upset about something, I would also ask them to stop and breathe, which I discovered toddlers who are angry are really not willing to do that. But I used to, when kids got angry, which usually meant that they were having a temper tantrum, ranging from sitting and crying, throwing yourself on the ground, screaming, or hurting someone. I had kids who hit and bit and pushed. I used to say to them, it's okay to be angry. It's not okay to hurt things or to hurt people. And I think that's pretty good advice for us as adults as well. That when we are angry, that we don't run away with it and end up acting out and hurting people who are close to us or hurting people in general. That we'd be a little more, thoughtful about what we're feeling and how we're going to address that. And here's the thing, you know, I do not like anger. I don't like talking about it. I don't like feeling it. I don't like it directed at me. It feels overwhelming to me. whether, you know, whether there's anything that's happening that's overwhelming or not, that anger, either in myself or someone else directed towards me, is very overwhelming. I grew up in a household where anger was pretty explosive and also unpredictable. And so my sensitivity to anger is pretty high. I try to think that I have better skills available to me than, you know, getting angry. But what I don't allow myself is the reality that anger is just energy. It's energy in my body that if I would stop and feel it, feel where it is in my body, feel what's happening in my body and allow myself to feel that anger, I could let go of it much quicker. Instead, what I tend to do is to fight reality. What is that? There's some saying that is what, I don't know who's saying this is, what we resist persists. And I hate little sayings like that, little rhymy things. I don't like them, but I'd be damned if that is not true. That I spend a good part of my time resisting what already is, resisting having chronic pain, when the reality is I do, and I have several medical issues that contribute to that. If someone's mad at me and I don't like it, I'll try to resist that. I had a few years back, I had a friend, a very close friend, who suddenly was not my friend. And I tried to contact her by phone and email and a letter, trying to find out what had happened. And I never got an answer. And so for a long time, I fought against that reality. And what that ended up doing was making the grief and the loss so much worse. I wasn't willing to be angry with her. I think for a long time, I thought there'd be some misunderstanding and that if I could just talk to her, that I could figure it out and it wouldn't be how it was. But the reality was the reality. And that relationship, for whatever reason, I think it's been like 8 years. I still don't know. And I still wonder at times, but, you know, the reality was, is that was gone and no amount of my resisting that was going to change it. All of I was doing is making moving forward harder for myself. You know, some people can also express anger. They get angry, they let it out and they're done. And I am not really that person. If you get angry at me and then you're done, I'm not done. And it's not that I'm like angry in return. It's that I would be hurt and it would take me a while to process that and to make sense of that. For me, anger is very much of all the emotions. It's one I think that I judge the harshest. I just have this sense of it being wrong. I think that that's connected to, again, growing up in a house where there was a lot of anger, sometimes violence, and feeling unsafe in those situations. And now, although my safety isn't threatened, I still have a hard time with anger. Instead of sitting with anger, allowing myself to feel it, even though it's uncomfortable, and allowing the feelings to come and then go as they naturally would. You know, I tighten up and I resist. I think making the feelings worse because I'm blocking them. They definitely aren't flowing. They're there, but they're not leaving anytime soon. I think I judge the anger as wrong, which increases my need to resolve it immediately. And when I do that, I jump to trying to make meaning out of the anger. It's it's very important to me to make meaning out of things, make meaning out of my life and the things that are happening to me. But when I jump from, you know, from anger at a loss that's just happened to trying to make meaning, what I'm trying to do is get it done. I just want to be done. I want to, you know, put that box away and move on and not have to deal with that or look at that again because I don't like it. Pema Chodron also talks about leaning in to the sharp edges of painful things. So leaning into anger, leaning into loss, leaning into grief, and allowing ourselves to feel those sharp edges. And when we do, when we're able to stay with those emotions, what we can often find is that underneath, there's something else. Underneath the anger, there's sadness. Underneath, what I usually find underneath the anger, a lot of the time is fear. And I see this at work when I'm driving. Or if you've ever had a toddler who, when my son Ben was probably three, he took off from me running down the sidewalk and was approaching an intersection. And, you know, it wasn't a real busy intersection, but he was little and there were cars. And so I was running after him to try to get him. And let me just say, aside from physical issues I have, after you've had three kids, running down the street is not so easy. And I did catch him, but I was so angry at him. And when I was able to take a couple breaths and calm myself, what I realized is I was afraid. I was afraid he was going to run out into the street and get hit by a car. And that fear came out as anger, I think, because sometimes that's sort of an easy way to do it. You know, I don't think our society is real sensitive to people being sad or depressed. I think we're much more comfortable with anger. I was rereading this book called A Buddhist Grief Observed. And the man who wrote this book, Guy Newland, had lost his wife from cancer. And it turns out he had had a long-term relationship before he was married to his wife, Valerie. And that woman's name was Joan, and apparently she also died. So he certainly had a lot of experience with grief. And so he's talking about these losses. So 18 months later, I dreamt of a tree that had been cut into very deeply but not cut down. The tree grew year after year, and there was always a scar. It would always be marked. But the scar's shape and size in relation to the growing tree kept changing. A time came when it was not the main thing you noticed when you looked at the tree. And later, the scar was so integral to the tree that you could not recognize it as having been a wound. This was so clear. I could never stop being the person who loved and lost Joan. Now I would see that person. Now I would see what that person could become next. And he, you know, he goes on to say that what has happened can't unhappen. And then there's a quote to explain this from Derek Parfit that says, when someone I love died, I found it helpful to remind myself that this person was not less real because she wasn't real now, just as people in New Zealand aren't less real because they aren't real here. I think I've seen that. I guess I've sort of seen that story in a literal sense with my own body and the scars I have from surgeries, which I have several and they're pretty big. And seeing that at the moment when you have surgery and that scar is created, there's so much focus. Everything is focused on that. Your body's focused on it to heal. Mind is focused on it. Any exercise or routines that you do are around taking care of that, cleaning the wound, dressing the wound, physical therapy and rehab, those kinds of things. But as time goes on, all those things aren't needed anymore because healing has been happening. All of your attention and all of your focus isn't drawn to that one spot. The one spot, the scar, becomes less prominent in your life. And if that's the loss of someone that you cared for who's passed away, that loss doesn't stay the prominent thing in your life forever. Although I don't think you get over it. I think we find ways to move forward in spite of it or with it. I'm not sure in spite is the right word. But we learn to move forward anyway. And although we may feel that loss on the holidays or a person's birthday or something that makes us think of them, over time, the thinking of them is not our constant companion. You know, time passes and things shift and change. And I think it's also important, I think that point about something's not unreal just because it's not here. I often will be just thinking, you know, there are millions and millions and millions and millions of people in this world who have a life that I don't know anything about. My life doesn't intersect with them. You know, I'm not aware of what they do on a daily basis or what it's like maybe in their country. But that doesn't make those people less real. So when someone dies, it doesn't mean that they weren't real. And it also doesn't mean that they aren't around. I'm a big believer that the energy that makes us who we are, which I think of as our soul, that energy doesn't disappear. You know, energy continues to exist. So it may leave a particular physical form, but it's still around. And I think that the energy of people who loved us can often stay close by, maybe to give us a sense that they're okay and that we're going to be okay. Or I also believe in reincarnation, and I believe that that energy then can go into a new form, a new human form, and have a life again. So that was a lot on that. And I think the same thing is true for other losses. So losses from chronic pain. When I was in high school, before my first surgery, actually for a while after, I played sports, and basketball was my favorite sport. And the fact that I can't do that anymore doesn't make it any less real that it existed. It doesn't make it, you know, any less real that that was a part of who I was. And even though that part of me is gone, it doesn't mean that that can't be celebrated in remembering, in reminding ourselves, just like we remind ourselves of people we've lost. And I don't mean reminding yourself in a critical way, in a judgmental way of, oh, look, I can't do that anymore. But in an honoring and recognizing something that was important to us. And now, you know, that has changed. And of course, we have other things that are important to us. I think anger is such a difficult thing. I think we typically maybe, I don't want to be angry, or maybe I don't accept that in myself, but I also think that kind of as a country, we're a little crazy about some things, and we often, I think, see anger as a negative thing, when really it has some positive forces. It's an energy within us, an energy that needs expression, that it has to be funneled in some way. And I think, a big part of it, a big part of grief, I guess, that could be shortened or maybe not be so hard as if we would allow ourselves to feel anger without feeling guilty about it. Allow the feelings to come and go without either resisting it or trying to force it to be gone before it's ready to be gone. And underneath anger, aside from the fear, I think we also can find guilt under our anger. And then in that sense, it's anger that we've turned towards ourselves. So, if someone I love dies, and I turn that anger in on myself for guilt, then I look at myself and think I should have done this, that, and whatever else, and that I then could have prevented this death. Or I should have done something to keep this person in my life, even though they weren't in my life anymore. And so I feel guilty of that. I lose some physical ability that I can, of something I can do. Like one of my arms can't reach out straight. Like I can't reach up into a cabinet and get a bowl with my left arm. And I may be angry about that. And then I turn it inward and feel guilty because, we can tell ourselves, well, I shouldn't be angry about that because I have this, this, and this. So I'm just being ungrateful or whatever. And I think we just guilt ourselves to death. I think we can have a false sense of responsibility for things that we guilt ourselves over. Just a fear of letting people down, letting ourselves down, letting other people down, and trying to live with that without beating ourselves up. Because the reality is, is that we are experiencing losses all the time. I think on a daily basis there are big things, obviously, like someone dying, or say losing your leg or something like that. And then there are, small things. Seasons change. We just had daylight savings time. And so now, it's dark early. And there's a loss of sunlight, a loss of time. The seasons change, the leaves fall. And we feel those losses on a daily basis. And if we were more in tune to the smaller losses, I think we would do better than when bigger losses come and we have to face those. I think we'd have more practice and more ability, maybe more agility in that, and be able to navigate our grief, our sense of loss, without hurting ourselves or hurting other people with anger that we lash out with. The same book that I was reading has a quote by Thoreau that said, "Not till we are lost, not till we have lost the world, do we begin to find ourselves and realize where we are and the infinite extent of our relations. I think basically what he's saying there is that we've all experienced loss. We're all grieving all the time, and that we're not alone in doing that. And that I am not the only person who's trying to figure out how to deal with whatever loss has come up and my own sense of who I am and how to put those things together in a way that I continue to move forward in my life. So remember, compassion first. I think of that today, because tomorrow I have a funeral to go to. That I don't know that I need compassion for so much, but I know there are other people who will be there who are hurting, who may need, you know, my compassion as my first response to them, as a healing response to them. And I believe that we are not alone in our losses. And I believe by showing compassion first, we honor our losses. And we honor our losses and the losses that other people face when we're able to look at them. So remember, compassion first. Hopefully, I will be back next week and the universe won't be stealing any of my notes or ideas anymore. Thanks for listening.